Sup, fellow freak shows? I'm Lorraine.
And I'm Amanda, and welcome to Monsters of the Midwest.
All right, welcome back to your new favorite podcast, guys. Are you guys ready for something? Yeah, I've got a doozy for you guys today. And it's one that hits me real different because you'll find out it has a lot to do with something very personal to me, and it connects with me in a really different way. So I
literally know nothing about it. So she wanted to tell me that she wanted to keep it a secret, but that's what we're going to do. My reaction's going to be authentic, and I don't want to know about it unless I do know about it beforehand, because right. I want to.
Right. So this one is going to be, I think once I start talking about it, you're going to get it. If you don't, then shoot, what fucking rock have you been living under? I don't know. But
all of them.
Right. All of them.
All the rocks.
Right. So I'm going to put the case that I kind of teased you guys about last week. I'm going to set that aside, put it on the back burner, and I'm going to say we're going to stick in Chicago for a little while. Let's stay in Chi-Town. Let's see what goes on in Chi-Town. Yeah. But I'm going to talk
a lot.
But I decided I'm going to talk about a very well-decorated man from Chicago. Chicago's finest at one point, they used to say. Let me just start off by saying this. Is it going to be a two-parter?
Two-parter.
Because there is way too much to cover in just one episode, and I don't feel like we would be giving you guys the full take on it if we didn't separate it up. So
awesome. I'm down for a two-parter.
Yeah, so, I mean, the first round, we're going to kind of lay the foundation because you can't have a good solid house without a foundation, right? So I'm going to lay the foundation today, and then next week we're going to get into the real thick of it. All right.
Yeah.
So
right, I'm ready. I'm down.
All right. So let's talk about some of these things, like some of his accomplishments. He was nominated 10 times and won 6 out of the 10 times by the NAACP. Which, for those who don't know, it's the National Association for Advancement of Colored People.
All right.
He holds the title of that no other artist ever being nominated for more awards for Soul Train. In 2013, he was named number one musical genius since 1993 by the Vibe Awards. He's actually a Guinness Book of World Record holder in 1995 for first song to debut on U.S. charts at number one. Three Grammys in both 1998 and 99. There was two in 98, one in 99. In 2013, he holds the key to the city in Baton Rouge. As you can tell, we're not even halfway through this. I mean, he's a well-decorated man.
I can tell. So far, sounds great on paper.
Right. So in 2013, he was Chicago's Pop Superstar of the Year. He won Song of the Year, R&B and Hip Hop categories. He's nominated 274 times for different types of Billboard awards, BET awards, just tons of like musical awards, producer awards. He won 110 out of those 274.
Good Lord.
You know, and he also had a lot of like philanthropy that he was involved in. In 2007, he donated all the proceeds from all of from his songs to Rise Up for the Virginia Tech shooting survivors and families. He regularly donates to multiple African charities and causes throughout the U.S. area. In 2016, he donated hundreds of cases of water to the Flint water crisis. I mean, still, we're on a good track here, right? It seems, you know.
Right. Sounds like a stand-up guy.
Right. he actually was the most successful R&B artist of the 1990s.
I feel like I know who this is.
Yep, you might. We're getting there. So the 55th best-selling musical artist in the United States, and that's to this day, still holds that title. He's sold over 32 million albums over his course of being in the business. He's nicknamed the, I mean, he is, if you look it up, he's nicknamed the King of R&B. Also.
Oh, I know who this is.
Also, he has 11 counts of sexual assault, 21 counts of child pornography, 10 counts of criminal sexual abuse, human trafficking and sex trafficking, racketeering charges, obstruction of justice, sexual exploitation of children, kidnapping, bribery, direct violation of the Mann Act, which is transporting girls with the purpose of prostitution. So today I'm going to talk to you about one of the truly most terrifying fucking monsters that is hiding in plain sight. This is the story of the Pied Piper of R&B, Mr. Kells, Mr. R. fucking Kelly.
I knew it. I was like, you know what? Damn it, Chicago. I'm trying to think of who it was. And as soon as you started naming off all this stuff, I'm like, son of a bitch, I know who this is.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So it's Robert Sylvester Kelly. born January 8th, 1967. He's currently 54. He's from Southside Chicago, Illinois. He has three half siblings. He has an older sister, an older brother, and then a younger brother. His mother, Joanne, was a school teacher. She was a devout Baptist. She's from Arkansas. And I looked multiple different sources, and it still says that he has never named his father, and his father is completely unknown.
Oh, wow. But like an absentee father? Or
absentee
just...
and, like, never, no one ever mentioned anything. Like, literally unknown.
Oh, wow.
But Joanne remarried a man named Lucius, which you'll hear about that again, when Kells was five. So that was pretty much, like, his dad, like, growing up.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to talk about, like, his younger life, kind of, like, where some of this... where the fuck this all might have started, you know, brewing the pot here.
Right. Yes. I would like to know because I actually did not watch that documentary.
Oh, there's multiple.
That everyone was watching. The one on Netflix that everyone was, oh my God, you have to watch this, where he got interviewed also. I didn't watch any of it.
Yeah. So there's, that's actually, it started off as a Lifetime documentary, was when I first saw it, and it was called Surviving R. Kelly. It is now on Netflix, but Netflix also went deeper into it and brought in a Surviving R. Kelly the Part 2, and then there's also like another, which those were both in 2019, and then in 2020 they came back with like a where we're at in this case now type thing, and it had a lot of like the media coverage. Also, like, one of them has a lot of, like, interviews from his family and things like that. Just, like, different points of view on this fucking mess, to say the least.
No kidding.
So, he became a member of the church choir when he was eight. Obviously, his mom being a big into the church, so he followed suit with that. He described in his autobiography that at age eight, that's when he, you know, found his love for music. That's when he also had his very first girlfriend, and her name was Lulu. And that was like his first everything. That was the first like time when he, like in his autobiography, talks a lot about her. Like that's the first time that he felt love and felt like, you know, somebody finally understood him, you know, like I can't remember feeling that type of shit at eight years old, but okay, like whatever. You know,
yeah, eight seems like a stretch, but okay.
But I mean, also come to find out, I mean, I'm just going to connect it to this, and this is completely 100% my opinion, just by the research that I've done and what I know. We all find out he likes little girls. So I just
clearly
how he describes his relationship with Lulu in his autobiography is just really kind of red flaggy to me. Like, okay. You know, are you connecting your later, like, connections with little girls to that relationship you had with her? Or, you know, I don't know. Just, it seems off.
So something I want to ask you, or more so just mention it, is it's a grown man who's, you know, highly successful at this point, and he's talking about his first ever love or his first ever relationship with Lulu, as you say,
right.
And he's describing it in an adult way. He's not describing it as a cute 8-year-old.
Exactly.
So there's going to be some sort of like, that seems a little creepy or a little weird. And it's because he's describing it as an older man reliving his younger youth.
Exactly. Exactly.
His youth relationship.
Right. But back to Lulu, like he talks about, they used to meet up and play at the creek in the park area around where they both grew up. Like they were inseparable, like little best friends, right?
Okay.
So he also suffered a lot of bullying, and so did Lulu. So even though they would go and meet up right, like these little spots, they would often find themselves with older kids coming and bullying them, treating them like shit. And that they sucks. they actually got into a big fight with two of the older kids at one point. And this resulted Lulu being pushed into the creek and being pulled under by the current. And that's led to her death when she was 8.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. She couldn't pull herself up because of all the currents from the water. So it was
wow.
a freak accident, like result coming from like a bullying standpoint. Like, you know, they were bullying her, knocked her into the water, not with intention to kill her, but the water took over, you know.
Right. Yeah. That must have been a deep ass creek.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know much about Chicago or like the rivers or creeks or whatever that are around there, but damn, you know.
Probably rained real heavy and the current was really strong at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he talks a lot about Lulu was like his first ever musical inspiration. But I did find that was in his autobiography. But I did find a couple other articles where he had been quoted in the 90s saying that his mom was his musical inspiration. So there's, you know, I guess depends on his mood or what he wants to talk about or both.
Lion ass bitch.
Right. But he also dones a lot of his inspiration from Marvin Gaye. Like that's where he got his whole like whatever. I don't know. Kells obviously has different stories for different flavors, I suppose. So we'll
right.
see.
Right. Depends on who he's talking to or I don't like that.
Right. But right. Yeah. I picked up a lot of red flags in a lot of this stuff. So.
Right.
So like. Just focusing on, like, his early life, this was a huge tragedy. I mean, that's a tragedy for anybody to lose your best friend, let alone being that young. And things were not any better at home with him. They were really fucking bad. From the age of, like, 8 to 14, he was the victim of sexual abuse at the hands of his older sister, Teresa, who was supposed to be his babysitter. And I suppose I should say this, like... This case is heavy. Disclaimer, there's a lot of abuse and death, obviously, with children, stuff like that. So if that is not for you, you might want to chuck the deuces and see us in a couple weeks because this case is just going to progressively get worse.
Good. Yeah. Just heads up for anybody who doesn't want to hear more.
Right. Yeah. So, being abused by his sister, it happened to both Rob Kells and his younger brother, Carrie, who Carrie actually talks about it in one of those R. Kelly, I think it's the second R. Kelly, Surviving R. Kelly docuseries. Mm-hmm. He goes on there and talks about it, and he says that his sister would separate them both. She's supposed to be watching them. She'd separate them in different rooms, and she would abuse or, like, do things to both of them, like beat them, whatever, sexually assault them, like separately, and then try to pin them against each other. So it was,
toxic bitch.
Right, right.
Nothing like starting your PTSD off real early.
Right, at age 8, yeah.
Yikes.
But he talked a lot about it in his book and brought it out and said, you know, his book came out in 2012 and it's called Solar Coaster, his autobiography.
Okay.
But he's quoted in that saying like, I'm right. Like, geez. But, he was too afraid and too ashamed to speak about it. And that was his first time that he ever spoke about it publicly.
There's a stigma around that too. As soon as you get to a certain point, like in legal trouble, then all this stuff starts coming out. Well, I was abused when I was such and such years old. Oh, right. I had this tragedy happen. And I'm not saying that in a light sense. I'm saying it like you know, I don't really appreciate when things come to light after something tragically happened to that person to try to bring some sense to what has happened or what shaped this person to become this person. But in the same regard, like men getting help for things that have happened to them in the past, like it's increasingly becoming more normal to do so. Because remember before, a man talking about his feelings to a therapist or trying to get help or just explaining how like things emotionally affect them, it's, there was like a bad stigma around it.
And for sure. Yeah.
And this, although it came out in his autobiography and things like that, the legal trouble that he has been in is it's kind of like casting an ugly shadow. Like, oh, now you're going to say that you've been abused and now you're going to say all this stuff when all, right. you know, you're in legal trouble. It just, it rubs me the wrong way. Although I'm happy that he had a space to say what he had to say. I just think the timing was very poor.
Yeah. And I have a little piece in here where I kind of divulge in the same type of thing. Like I mean, for those of you that know me and know how I like to go into the mental fuck up of people when it comes to stuff like this, it's kind of like a nature versus nurture thing. Kind of the same with like Ed Kemper and stuff like that. Like, I feel like if he was able to talk about this or talk about it with his mom, like he wasn't even able to speak about it with his mother, that this was happening with somebody that's, you know, blood sibling at home. You know, and it just continue. I mean, from ages 8 to 14, I mean, that's a long time to suffer from whatever, like, that all included that he suffered from. And,
right,
you know, that stuff builds up and builds up. And then it, I mean, look at how it progressively went in his life. You know what I mean? I feel like
yes,
it could, this could have been changed. And so that's why I think mental health is so fucking important. And, yeah, ugh, it's just.
Right. It sure is. It definitely is.
Yeah. So anyways, little sidebar there. But so at age 10, he was able to get a different type of babysitter, which was an older male friend of the family. Well, we can guess about how well that went because it was the same thing. This time it wasn't with his brother. It was just him. And he was.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Yep. So then I found another thing that happened that he talked about pretty heavily in his book that happened when he was 11. He was actually shot in the shoulder by a group of boys that tried to steal his bike. Like, he's from the south side of Chicago. He's not from a good area. Obviously being bullied most of his life. But, like, I did find from other reports that were quotes from his family members claiming that he shot himself in an attempt of suicide after the fact of all of the abuse that was happening. So.
And you said he was 10?
At 10, yeah.
Oh.
So it didn't say where the gun came from. He didn't talk about it, or it wasn't reported, like, where the gun came from. So I can't, like, say anything about that. But he did suffer an injury from a bullet wound in his shoulder when he was 11. It says 11, and then the other one said 10 and a half. Like, what his family said. So, I mean, you know, that time.
Around that time, though.
Yep.
But, still young.
But 10, still is, young. 10 is when his male friend of the family started heavily abusing him. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a lot. So
some friend.
Right, right. So in September of 1980, he entered the Kenwood Academy in Chicago, the Hyde Park area, and he fell in love with basketball. He started playing basketball. This is high school, I believe, for him. Yeah, so things are looking up. He's able to, like, find something he's passionate about. And he was really, really, I mean, he's really, really good ball player. There was multiple accounts saying from coaches, from everything, that, like, he was just a solid basketball player. Like, that.
Nice.
Yeah, he grew that into his passion. He's like, okay, this is what I'm going to do to get me the hell out of here. Like, his whole career was based off of, I want to get the hell out of my house. I want to get the hell away from these people. They're not people to be trusted. They're not family. You know, everybody except his mother. His mother was the only one that he spoke highly of the whole time.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So he played basketball at Kenwood, and then I think his sophomore year it was, he met his teacher Lena McLean, and that was the choir teacher. and she heard him singing in the hall and was like, oh my God, like you can sing, you know, like try this out, like, and got him to join the choir and encourage him to be in a talent show. He did not want to do it. He was like, no. That he's
absolutely not.
He's like, singing is for a weak man. I'm here with like basketball. I got my shit. Like, sorry. But apparently she was just like super focused on it. Was like, no, you have to do this, blah, blah, blah.
That's interesting that you say that. Singing is for weak men. So he already has it in his mind that type of profession is for weak dudes. And he doesn't want none of that because he's been suffering all this abuse for so long that he wants to feel manly. He wants to feel strong. So that's a good indicator right there.
Right.
That he was suffering some sort of abuse. And, you know, you don't catch that. In the 80s, they didn't catch on to stuff like that.
Hell no. No. You know, or now? Like.
Oh, yeah. Red flag.
Right. Exactly. So she, you know, kept pushing, encouraged his music career, this and that. And he finally did go and do the talent show, and he did a song by Ray Charles, and he went out there and had his sunglasses on, did the whole bit, whatever, took first place. Just blew the competition out of the water, you know, so she spent the rest of, like, that year, like, encouraging him to quit basketball and focus on music. Like, I think this is, this may not be your passion yet, but you are so talented, you have no idea, this is going to take you places. Just trust me. And, you know.
Just you wait and see.
Right. And she helped him every opportunity to get him on stage, get him to like perform at different like talent shows, things and that, which he won every single one that she encouraged him last. So she completely turned around like his career of, well, you know, as much as a sophomore could have, like, type thing.
Right. Just changed the trajectory. Right. Right.
So another thing that it was noted that he suffered from while he was in high school was the media threw it out there in the Surviving R. Kelly things. Like, they always want to talk about how he was diagnosed with dyslexia in high school, like a severe case. So he still, to this day, cannot read or write. He has to have somebody to do that for him. So, yeah, it actually led him to drop out of high school after it said 1 year, but then, like, his talent show was his sophomore year. So I'm guessing at the end of sophomore year was when he dropped out of high school.
Yeah.
So,
these timelines, some articles, they just pick and choose what they want to say.
Right.
So it's hard to like really get the truth, but
right.
somewhere and, around there, it's and, within a year or so.
Yeah. And I dove deep into many, many articles. I've really well read this case over, not just even right now, but like once all these allegations started to come out, just cause you'll find out later on why, but,
yeah.
Why it hits me so different, but, so he knew, like, after he quit high school or dropped out that, you know, I really did love being on stage. And, yeah, you know, I'm good at that. So I got to get a fucking job. I got to do something with my life. I'm not in school, you know, trying to help mom out, whatever. He's like, I'm just going to start singing at the Subway, you know, and trying to make, you know, I guess it was reported he was singing like under the L tracks, I guess. I don't know much about the Chicago Subway.
Okay.
But dude made a lot of money. So that's how he spent most of his days, was just making music and singing it for whoever.
Cool.
Yeah. So then fast forward.
You do what you got to do.
Right. So fast forward in 1989, he teamed up with Mark Williams, Vincent Walker, and Sean Brooks, a couple of friends, and they created a little boy band group called MGM. He said sometimes they called it musically gifted men or mentally gifted men. It just depended on who they were talking to, but they joked that it meant both.
Oh, so, okay.
Right. Cool. You know?
Super cool.
I know. Mentally gifted, I bet. You know?
Right.
When you got to brag about that, that's usually when you're lacking in that.
Sure.
Right. But they recorded and released one single called Why You Wanna Play Me. So after they released that, the band broke up. shocking, but
damn it,
right?
Thought we had something.
I know, but however, he gained national recognition when MGM participated on the talent show Big Break in 1989. Okay. I've never heard of that, but apparently, you know, that's when all the big shows like the Star Search and all that shit was starting to become a big thing before American Idol and all that.
Yeah.
But they actually won. They won $100,000. They won the grand prize, you know.
What?
Yeah, which gave him the recognition. So in 91, that's when he signed with Jive Records. And he released his first album in 1992 called Born Into the 90s. I didn't have that album, but I pretty much had all the rest of them or still have all the rest of them.
I had zero.
Zero. Yeah.
So whatever the radio was playing, that's what I heard. I didn't hear anything else from any other album.
Yeah. For those who don't know, I'm a big, big 90s R&B person. I'm a big R&B person in general. So this was like my mecca, my era of all this music was like right everything I was fucking obsessed with and still kind of am. So
a little bit.
Yeah. So so he says that this first album, his debut album, it was credited. It was called the Public Announcement Album. And they said that his like genre was like New Jack Swing, bringing in that period of the early 90s. So he was actually doing something that was new. And, you know, I mean, that was the era of the whole Boys to Men coming in. They're doing like the soul shit, like with poppy dance, but also hip hop feel. Like it was a whole new thing, a whole new era, like a fusion genre.
Right. And it was. It definitely was.
Yeah. And I looked up what they consider New Jack Swing, and this is the definition of it. It's a fusion genre of hip hop, dance, pop, and R&B. It pushed the black artists into pop culture as well as in the movies. So this was the big, like the movies that it talked about was like Above the Rim, Boys in the Hood, In Living Color, the TV show, and then Poetic Justice. So that was the time frame when this is all, you know, getting real big.
It's really, really big, like, you know, LL Cool J and all of that, like that type of era for sure.
Yeah, that's like one of the best eras of R&B. But so 1993, he released his first solo album because the Public Announcement Album, he still had a few people working with him. You know, it was a solo thing. Jive wasn't going to throw all their money and all their eggs in one basket, you know. So they're like, all right, we'll just try this out. And it was hugely successful. So 12 Play was his first completely solo album. I have this one. It debuted 12 weeks at number one, which is huge for like a new
that
album.
That is huge. Yeah. Stupid huge.
Right. So that's the album that Bump and Grind is on, like Sex Me and Your Body's Calling. Oh, geez, we'll know those songs.
All of them sexy songs that y'all shouldn't have been listening to when you were that age.
Right, exactly. Third grade Amanda had no business listening to none of that shit.
Absolutely fucking not.
let alone buying that CD, let's be honest, or that, I guess that tape. That one might have been a tape. I might have bought the CD later on.
Cassette tape. Right. Oh, my God, dude.
Right. So, I mean, from then, he continued to make music for 25 years.
Yeah.
He, you know, I kind of made notes on here, like, this is when he really caught my attention. But not only did he catch my attention, but the lives of, like, most people when this released, you know. So then, 1996, this is when Kells really fucking jumped off. You know, he was, had this, all this new shit. And I think this may be, I don't know, how old were you in 96?
96? I was in elementary school. I don't even.
So you might have remembered this when this popped off, this song, though. So I Believe I Can Fly. That, like, that took the fucking world by, like, storm. And that's, like,
yes.
I don't even know how to explain how big that was. That song was fucking everywhere. I mean, yes, it came from Space Jam soundtrack, which Space Jam is epic, but, like, that song, they had it on, like, commercials. They had it at, I mean, you were hearing
everything.
That shit at graduations. That was, like, the graduation song of the year. We learned how to play that fucking song on flutophones or whatever those, like, stupid little plastic things that you play in elementary
school. The recorder?
The recorder, yeah. We learned how to play it on that. Like,
hell yeah, the recorder. Shout out if anybody played the recorder when they were in school. I bet you did.
Right. Like, that's
put a picture on our Facebook page so you can see what we're talking about.
Right. I mean, we played Lion King. We played songs from Lion King and fucking R. Kelly, I Believe I Can Fly. So, I mean, that's how, Like,
it's a classic.
Right. It's something, that's for sure. All right. So, like, he's like coming up by storm. You know, things are fucking good, right? 96 was a good year for him. So then he decides to just hear. Okay, so I'm going to explain it in the timeline that happens, but I want you guys to kind of think if any of this, because this is going to, this is what's going on behind the scenes, or I guess not behind the scenes, but this is what's going on to what we can see. Like what we can see he's doing, what it looks like on the outside. Okay. Cause he's got a change of pace. You know, he's so successful. This is what he wanted to do. All of a sudden he decides he's going to take a pause from music. What? Oh, like this is the biggest in 1997. He decided he's going to sign a contract and play professional basketball with the Atlanta Seagulls.
Oh, so he had FOMO.
Right. So now he's like, right? I'm actually making all this money, like on my own, nobody else. I have literally the biggest hit of the year. I mean, it, and I'm just going to say fuck it and play basketball. I just want to play basketball. So.
Basketball.
So this is, right. So this is a direct quote from him. He says, I love basketball enough to not totally let go of my music, but just to set it aside for a minute so I can fulfill these or some of these dreams I've had for a very long time. That's what he said. Okay, well, you know, whatever.
All right.
But sure. Feels like a red flag to me, but whatever.
Right.
But he was spoke, like I said before, he was spoke very highly of by his coaches, fellow players, everyone. Said he was a great ball player and they were excited to have him on. You know, he was a great team player. He actually is the very first musical artist to ever play professional basketball. So there was another, you know, award or something to put on his I Love Me wall.
There's another first.
Another one, yeah. So he played from 97 to 99. He was number 12.
We interrupt your regularly scheduled debauchery to talk to you about some other cool cats.
Hi, I'm Sean McCabe.
And I'm Carrie McCabe.
We are, well, married, obviously, but we're also obsessed with the darker side of things.
True crime stories, alien abductions, poltergeists. If it leaves you scratching your head and keeping those lights on at night, we want to hear about it.
That's why we host the podcast, Ain't It Scary, with Sean and Carrie.
Every week, we bring our listeners a true story guaranteed to send chills down your spine. From history's most brutal serial killers to the mystery of spontaneous human combustion.
Yep, lots of these stories leave unanswered questions behind, and you'll get to poke through the rubble of the evidence with a hardened skeptic and...
someone whose mind is more open to fun.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say.
The show really feels like just kicking back with us at home and chatting about monsters and tragedies, but having a few laughs along the way.
Just like we'd be doing if the mics were off, frankly.
You can find Ain't It Scary with Sean and Carrie wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at Ain't It Scary. Come play with us.
Forever and ever and ever.
What do you think? Their links are in the description, so go check them out, you turkeys. Time to agitate the gravel and get back to Coolsville.
He was the shooting guard and small forward. He was a three-times USBL champion in 1997, 98, and 99. So, I mean, he's coming with the heat in basketball. He clearly was very good.
I guess so, man. I didn't know none of that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
although, you know, that was the time of, you know, Dennis Rodman and stuff like that. Like, the Chicago Bulls were really big then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, for sure. Especially after, yeah, the Space Jam era, like Michael Jordan.
NBA
like
it was, Jam.
Right,
yes.
All of it.
All that.
Basketball in the 90s was, ugh, it was... I liked basketball in the 90s, and I didn't even fucking like basketball. That's how cool basketball was in the 90s, you know?
Right, exactly.
Now we still get to experience Shaq. He's just on different...
he's on a different level, though. Right. He's on a way different level.
Oh, yeah. Check out DJ Diesel and see how these worlds have collided once again.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so moving along. In 98, he decided, I'm getting out of basketball, but I'm going to leave Jive or at least try to do my own thing. Like, let's see how far I can push it, whatever. So he launches his own label, which is Rockland Records.
Okay.
Continued to make tons of albums, winning lots and lots of awards. He decided to do a collab with Jay-Z, P. Diddy, Russell Simmons, Johnny Cochran, to create the Best of Both Worlds. It was a bunch of, it looked like it was a bunch of tracks. I don't remember this, but this was like a lot of drama surrounding this because it never fully got finished, but it was very well like advertised saying, we're going to do this thing. We're going to do this thing. But then it never fully got done. And so it pissed off a lot of fans. But
I bet.
But the whole thing was
the highly anticipated album, and then it never comes out.
And then it never comes out. It's like, right.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, then those are some
terrible.
But I mean, those are some big fucking heavy hitters too. Like, you know, and it was supposed to be they were preaching like more unity for the Black community as a whole, which is great. I mean, it had a great message. Everything was, you know, awesome.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, egos got
great on paper.
Great on paper, but of course, you know, that's a lot with those type of heavy hitters. You got egos, so the egos are what got involved, especially with Jay-Z and R. Kelly. I remember their feud, but I don't remember this piece of it. I remember the feud they had later, but it started here, I guess.
Okay.
So their big ego issue delayed them finishing the project. But opening, I guess they did finish part of it, and they sold 285,000 copies, debuting at number 2 on Billboard, which was not great because they wanted to, all those people wanted to, they pushed it so it was going to be number 1. So this fucking caused a big mess. It was then later.
If you finished it, well, then maybe you would have.
Well, they were trying to figure out why it didn't drop at number 1, you know, so they were all promised all this stuff, and it was like, what the fuck's going on? Come to find out, Kelly leaked some of the tracks that they did finish.
Oh.
So he leaked them.
Whoops.
Yep, Jay-Z fucking went like crazy, crazy irate on it. The whole leak caused Kelly to have to restructure the whole album. He also then that led to tracks of his being leaked for his new album. It basically was kind of feeling like either he's just being reckless with not only his career but everybody else's on the project, or he did this on purpose and he's trying to cause a stir in the media. So
I would choose the latter, only because there's only room for one top dog.
Exactly. And you'll kind of get that with the more that's being released on this. So then he had to, quote unquote, redo most of his album and then re-released it as what we know as the Chocolate Factory. So
okay.
Chocolate Factory, that's 2002. That's like Ignition Remix. That's Snake, Step in the Name of Love. I mean, that's a big, big album. That was one of his highest paid albums, too.
Yep.
But unfortunately, he did not hit at number 1. He lost it. He was at number 2 to 50 Cent's Get Rich or Die Trying album, also a very big album of the time.
So what a time to be alive.
Right.
2002.
Right. So Kells is pissed off, obviously. And he says, you know what? I don't know what to do, but it's these people. They need my. His ego still standing in his way, said, you know what? They have to have my greatest hits album. It's time for a greatest hits. And I'm like, ooh, that's another red flag. Like, that's usually right when you start to have a downfall, when you can't make up content. So let's just throw all my good shit onto one and hope for some sales.
Yikes.
Right.
That was a poor move.
Yes. Well, I mean, this is the start of a bunch of poor moves, and we'll find out in what I talk about next week of how, like, the timeline behind the scenes of how that connects with what we're seeing on the outside.
Ooh, yes. I can't wait for that.
Yeah.
Juicy.
Yeah. So he releases the R and R&B collection, Volume 1. Volume 1. I don't believe there ever was a Volume 2, but, you know.
I'm like, Volume 1? He thought about doing this more than once?
Yeah, what apparently. I don't know. Right.
No.
Right. Okay, so we know that in 99 was when he decided they were going to do that collab, right? And then they get that beef.
Yes.
So we're all the way in 2004 when him and Jay-Z kind of make up a little bit and they decide, second time around, we're going to do this fucking collab. It's going to be great. I don't know what happened. you know, what blowjobs were given, but, you know, they got it together and they were going to create this new track with just those two, and it was going to be called Unfinished Business, and it was going to release all the shit they didn't finish. The media went fucking nuts. They loved it. They were like, hell yeah, blah, blah, blah. There was this beef. Now there's not. Oh my God, this is going to be great. You know?
Yeah.
It went like, it was like a musical phenomenon to have these two artists together. It debuted at number one. They decided to make it into a tour. It was fucking huge. Just huge.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember, like, people wanting to go see this, and I was like, I don't really like Jay-Z, so I'm not going to go. But, you know,
like, yeah, but, fuck that guy.
Right. Right. He can take Beyonce and go do all that. I'm like, whatever. But
yeah, no thanks.
So the tour, like, they were ready for it, whatever. This was going to be, like, R&B, raps, like, biggest collab, everything. It went sour right from the beginning. The tour was completely plagued. There was cancellations, late start times. Kel's not even showing up at all.
Wow.
Yeah, Kel's...
Classic.
Right, right. he actually complained that, like, the lighting was never focused on him in the right way.
Oh, fuck off.
Right, and that he, like, had all these, like, things he said about the lighting guys and how terrible they were. And then he actually allegedly assaulted the lighting director of the tour, allegedly.
Oh man!
Which, I mean, this guy
was intense.
This guy was well in the media saying that it was not alleged, but you know, he was never convicted of this. Not being convicted and letting off is something we're going to see a lot in his backstory.
Yes.
Just moving forward, he actually then ended up stopping one of the shows mid-performance, claiming he saw two men in coats with guns. Kells said that. So Jay-Z had already performed, and like Kells went out for his part, and he's like, "Oh no, I can't continue because there's two men in coats with guns." So they have to stop the show. You know, whatever.
What a drama king,
right?
Dude.
Right. Well, yikes. he's the king of R&B, so you know,
the king of drama, now, right? Too.
So security obviously stopped the show. They went through the venue. They finally cleared it. They said, all right, we're good. We can continue, blah, blah, blah.
There's no guys in trench coats.
There's no trench coats.
Let's keep it going.
Right,
yep.
Exactly. So Kells is walking back up to the stage to get back on, and one of the members of Jay-Z's entourage attacked Kells with mace, causing him a lot of injury in the attack, and he had to go to the hospital. So there it is, yet again, another concert was, you know, fucked up because
of
him.
Wow.
And the dude from Jay-Z's crew, his name was Ty Smith, and he was charged with assault but took a plea of disorderly conduct. And so after that was kind of like we're done. Like, Jay-Z was like, fuck this. He publicly said, fuck this, I'm canceling the tour early. Like, he was like, I ain't fucking with this shit no more. You burnt your bridge with me, buddy.
It's too much.
Right.
At that point, it's too much. You're being overly dramatic for no reason because of some lights, and you decide to get a little crazy and then think someone's out to get you, which who knows if that was true or not. I wasn't there. I couldn't say.
Right.
But for another performer who is wanting this to be successful, and then all this wacky shit starts going on with this dude that he really probably didn't even want to do it with in the first place, I'd be like, you know what? I'm good. Fool me once.
Right. You know? Right. So then, you know, that was on, I think it was like a Thursday or Friday show. And as we know with concerts, they continue throughout the weekend, you know, in most places. So the next spot on the venue was on a Saturday. This was, so Kells was kicked off the tour right then after that whole shit went down with Ty. But that Saturday, which is the following show, was like a big one. And so out of nowhere, Jay-Z decides to bring in, P. Diddy, Mariah Carey, and Method Man, and Usher to do this show to fill up the time slot. Because these people paid for this fucking tour, you know? Well, right. Kells was pissed. He's like, what the fuck? You're going to kick me off? And you had this planned. You wanted me off there, blah, blah, blah. You know, you had them on. Like, how are they just going to come and, like, up and come on a Saturday and just have material ready for this. Like, you had this plan behind my back, blah, blah, blah. So then Kells decides to sue Hove in the and all of his Marcy products projects production company, accusing them all of sabotaging the tour directly against him. He files a $75 million lawsuit. $15 million of it was for compensatory for like the shows missed. And then at least $60 million was punitive damages, meaning like my ass is hurt. Like, you hurt me. $60 million worth of hurting me. Like, what the fuck? My
Could you imagine suing somebody for $1 million because you hurt my feelings? That is insanity.
Let alone 60?
$60 million.
Right. You made me look like an ass and I'm mad. So, wow.
You would have a better time playing the Powerball.
Exactly. So, of course, like, this was a media frenzy. I mean, tons of tabloids, yeah. MTV fights. This was back and forth. TRL. Like, this was like...
Ooh, I love TRL. Right. For those of you who don't know, Total Request Live on MTV. Great, great show.
Right. I mean, this was just so fucking all over the place. Like, everybody knew about it. So Jay-Z at the time, he quoted, "This is all due to Kelly's lack of professionalism and unpredictable behavior." That's a fucking professional response. That is a sane man right there, it sounds like to me. Not like, I'm going to sue you for $60 million in punitive damages because you had P. Diddy and Mariah Carey on the track. Like, come on. Like,
wham, wham, crybaby. Right. Yeah.
So all this media attention did nothing but actually help Kells, honestly. As weird as that is, he continued to make music. He continued to release, you know, his fifth consecutive number one album in 2005. So it's kind of like when, you know, if you're in the media and people are talking about you, doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, you know?
Exactly.
At least in that industry.
And he has got, especially around that time, he had a crazy fan base following.
Since day one.
Loyal.
His fans still are. His fans are culty. They very much are. That'll come into part of what I'm going to say about me from a fan base too. Like, cause it's fucking weird and I don't understand it, but it's just feeling very culty to me. And I must have been some sort of member. I don't know. I definitely must have. You heard it here first, guys. So at this time, you know, he is just feeding off all this shit. 2005. And you'll find out 2005 was Mecca times of when some shit was going down behind the scenes. I feel like all these things that are happening are really setting the stage in front of other people, that people should have noticed that some shit was fucking going off. Something was not fucking right, bro. Like,
okay,
you're acting all like fucking
his
weird.
Behavior?
Yes. Yeah. 100%. Like, you went from being like doing all this philanthropy, doing all this stuff. Like, things were great. You were getting great awards. You know, you had really heavy hitters in the game that wanted to collab with you and create, like, you know, different projects. And now you're suing for $60 million. You're beating up electrical guys because they won't fucking shine a light on you. Like, you know what I mean? Just like, you're quitting to go play basketball. Like, shit's not going well. Like,
right. You're acting out in a weird way. Yeah. And people are starting to notice.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know if you remember this time, this next spiel that he does, but I remember it. And I remember it being really fucking weird.
All right.
With all of this, you know, attention, he's like, you know what? I'm going to release a hip opera, Trapped in the Closet. Do you remember Trapped in the Closet?
That. What in the fuck is that?
Oh, my God. This thing was insanity. In fucking sanity. Okay.
Trapped in the closet.
For those who have seen it, please send us messages. Send me something, because please tell me somebody else remembers this, because this took the media and all of his fans, everything, by storm. Like, where in the fuck did this come from? So
I think she's making it up. So if somebody can verify that that's true.
Hell no, I'm not. And I actually went to go find a link for it, and you can't even get all of the chapters anymore. You can't get them because actually September 21st of this year, due to some of the stuff that's going on in the court case, they pulled it. They pulled it completely.
Wow.
So those OGs out there that have the DVD of all 35 chapters, bro.
35 chapters?
Oh, yes, 35. Spoiler alert.
Wow.
So...
wow. Okay. I mean, you know, I'm going to take your word for it, but I want someone else to comment. Let me know.
I'm
Trapped in the Closet by R. Kelly.
I'm sorry. The original, there's 33 chapters. The other two were like live performances that were considered chapters in his book. He said they were chapters, but they weren't official chapters. Okay. So he decides he's going to release his first five chapters of Trapped in the Closet. So from 2005 to 2012, he released 33 chapters officially. The first five chapters appeared as the final tracks on his album from 2005, T3 Reloaded. That's where it took people by storm. They're like, what the fuck? I remember listening to these and like, what is this? This is not even, it's like a fucking telenovela, but like he's the narrator and it's just like telling the story. And then, I'm getting ahead of myself here to explain this to you guys, for you guys who don't know, like you, Lorraine.
I have no idea. I didn't even know that it existed.
Oh, my God.
I am all ears.
Okay, so chapter one he released was the lead single, and then he released each chapter at, like, he started doing it radio only. Like, so... it started on the album, and then he started, like, dropping them. So this obviously went fucking crazy for all the YouTubers. I mean, it was on YouTube, and it was on, it was very, like, you must hear it then, you can't stream it type thing, until it was just, like, one of those type of release things that we don't really have anymore, but, you know.
Right, like, hear it here first. Like, when a music video used to come out, it would come out on MTV, and you'd have, like, a countdown, and then you would see the music video for the first time.
Yes,
so
exactly.
So it was, like, really hype. You have to be there, because it's going to debut right now, and you got to go watch it. I mean, YouTube was created in, what, 2005, right?
Yeah, this was, like, peak beginning of YouTube, like, era. But, like, this shit was so batshit crazy. Like, it was very different, very off-brand. But he had everybody fucking hooked, like on the edge of their seats, like, what the hell's going to happen? What about the next chapter? What's going on with the story? Like, we were all so fucking invested in this weird as fuck thing that he was pulling out there. So let's think about, like, just to throw it back for the people, like, to connect to the time. So this is the time, like, everywhere, like, everyone my age was like, he decides that he was given a huge spot. Away from Jay-Z on the VMAs, the 2005 VMA Music Video Awards, which were also huge at this time. Like,
yes, they were.
Everything MTV was huge at this time. So let's think like what we were listening to on the VMAs. Like, this was the era of, like, Since You've Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson, Candy Shop, 50 Cent, Mr. Brightside. Ying Yang came out with Weight.
The Killers.
Yeah, they came out with Weight. Mm-hmm. We got Holler Back Girl. Like, that was 2005 MTV Video Music Awards. So Kelly comes up there and he performs or whatever, and he's just like, he stops and I tried to find so hard to find the recording of this, but it's also been wiped from the internet. I wish I would have known I was going to talk about this, because I would have bootlegged the fuck out of it so we could, you know, share it.
damn it.
Because that performance was fucking weird. But he released Chapter 6, a live alternate ending to Chapters 1 through 5, which we were already all obsessed with. Because he kept teasing, like, more's going to come. So, like, literally, if you didn't watch the VMAs, you didn't see this performance. It was...
oh, wow. That's kind of clever on his part,
it's so off-brand, but it's so fucking, like, smart. From a business standpoint.
Right.
And it's like, to think this dude can't read or write, but, like, he's this twisted to come. I don't know, man. It's crazy. So.
Wow.
Okay, I have stuff written down about it, but if you don't know anything about the Trapped in the Closet, like, you're not going to understand these. Okay, so the what he talked about was, like, there was a huge fight between the two. Basically, it's like a love story where there's lots of twists and turns. I guess before...
Okay.
I guess I do have all the chapters written down, so maybe we'll do that before I go into the other part, since you don't know anything about it. So we're going to unpack Trapped in the Closet, okay?
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, so Kelly plays the stay with me, guys. I promise it's worth it. So Kelly plays the protagonist, Sylvester, which is actually his middle name. And he wakes up after a one-night stand with a woman, okay? So he's like, oh, shit, what's going on? He prepares to leave, and that's when her husband returns. And Sylvester is forced to hide in the closet. And that's what sets, like, all the series of events. He's trapped in the closet. Because now that's when shit starts to go crazy. Okay?
This is already sounding great.
Oh, my God. It was.
So,
and each chapter leaves on, like, a fucking cliffhanger. So I just wrote down, because I don't want to ruin it, because you still can find a lot of these chapters online if you do a little bit of digging. So I'm just going to read, like, the cliffhangers that happened on the end of the chapters, okay?
All right. I'm ready.
So... the chapter one, now he's opening up the closet. And I wish I could sing, because I would sing them in how because he sings them the same in every single chapter at the end. You know?
I'm sure.
And then, so chapter two is, I can't believe it's a man. Three is, call up to my home and a man picks up the phone. Then four, oh my God, it's a rubber. Five, she introduced me to the police. And, so, six, going around the room, both hands on the gun, and pow. So, obviously, there's cheating. Then you find out your bitch is cheating. Then you find out it's the cop that pulled you over that is the one that you're cheating. Then there's a shooting. Then there's a noisy neighbor. I, like, don't even want to go into all of them. Then there's a baby daddy fight. Then there's an abusive pimp who is named Lucius, which is actually his stepdad's name. So there's a lot of, like, weird stuff to unpack that's connected to his stepdad also that he kind of released.
Okay.
So then, you know, like, you find out at the end of 20, like, there's escorts that are being ran out of the church. There's an AIDS scare. There's, you know, you find out that they're actually gay and in love. There's two men. And then there's a mad woman because there's a guy that doesn't have a penis. She thought there was... I mean, this thing is fucking nutty, dude. Like, it's so nutty.
What the hell?
Yes.
And what was he on?
Exactly. There's conspiracy in it. There is... So, the last chapter that they had... The ending credits, it says, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Out of the Closet show. So it was all about coming out. So this shocked people because they were like, because when he stopped it on the first couple of chapters, it had the AIDS scare. And they were like, oh, my God, he's got AIDS. And then,
which
ties in to some things with the victims, because there was also, that's when allegations started to roll. From some of the victims.
Okay.
That was eventually because they were like, oh shit, he's got AIDS. He's saying publicly he's got AIDS. I'm a victim here. Like,
oh fuck, yeah. Right. I need to say something.
Exactly. So there was that. Then it kept going. And then it talked about the I'm in love with the man, blah, blah, blah. So then, like, the ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Out of the Closet show. And it was like, holy fuck, Kells is gay. Like, oh my God. Like, everybody, I mean, women were crying. They were upset. You know, all his OG fans were like, what the fuck? There's no chance for me and him. Like, it was just, everything
that
was
so bizarre.
It was.
That's very bizarre.
Everything was speculated all over. I mean, then he just brought that whole thing, just skyrocketed him in the media again. Like, and then here we are. We're at number, like, you know, he's at the top of the food chain again. And that was only at, like, 12 chapters. And he kept, like, releasing the sagas, like, over and over again, like, in little hunks and chunks to just keep people thirsty enough, you know?
I miss that whole, the whole thing.
Oh, my God, yeah.
The hip-hopera.
Yeah, yes.
That shit is so weird. But okay, you know, it happened.
So then they were like, well, we need the last, like, they were saying, well, then he released some, like, in a Trapped in the Closet DVD, you know, and you can get the additional ones from here. And, like, you know, he definitely capitalized on all of it and sold all these things.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And then he said in some sort of interview, I think it was on TRL, in October of 2012, he announced that the end of the saga would conclude on November 23rd of 2012. By the DVD, the full DVD. So, of course, those DVD sales went fucking nutty as shit. And it was just like... It was just...
I can't believe that.
It was like, okay, this dude that... Because mind you, like, once the rest of it all came out, he's starting to get allegations. Allegations right. are coming out. Also, a sex tape was released in the middle of all of this, too. Yep.
I remember that part.
Okay, yeah. That we'll get into that on the next one too. But all this shit is going on like in front of everybody's eyes, you know? So some of the I'm gonna read some of the comments that like some people that wrote about the like different like media people, whatever, wrote about this Trapped in the Closet. No other art compares to this. It's truly mind blowing. Whether you watched it out of curiosity or because you think it's a joke, you'll find yourself down a rabbit hole of something that is very friendly and more obsession. It's, I can't understand the obsession, but I'm obsessed. And then somebody else wrote, it's subtly free. It's so dumb. It's fucking brilliant. What a work of art. I mean, it's just...
That last one, though.
Yeah. Okay. So it was... SNL had a fucking heyday with it. Mad TV ripped it apart. I mean,
comedians probably. Too.
Yes, they all did. I mean, I can't believe you didn't hear about
this. Cat Williams did something else.
Hell yeah,
like that.
Cat Williams did something. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was. Huh. It was like everybody was like, "What the fuck is up with the Pied Piper of R&B? Like, what is going on?" You know, like it was. People were obsessed. It averaged 7 billion views in the first 22 chapters on YouTube in 1 week. 7 billion views at the beginning of YouTube. Like, that's huge, you know?
That's enormous.
That's nothing now, but it's like...
Right, yeah, exactly.
You know, and then there was also an additional 7 million views on R. Kelly's personal Vevo, which at that time you had to pay for the chapters, I guess.
Oh, so, okay.
But those chapters on Vevo were actually edited. So.
Oh.
Yeah. But I mean, it was so crazy. So I'm going to end this craziness with what he said was his quote on why he made Trapped in the Closet. Because Trapped in the Closet, you'll find this is like his final piece of work before shit really hit the fan with all the allegations and getting into... all the tragedy and disgusting monster antics that we're going to the next chapter. So,
okay.
All right.
Let's hear it.
So, I don't know how to explain how I wrote it. It just keeps rhyming and rhyming. Trapped in the Closet was taken on like its own mind of its own. It's taken a life, a body, a mind of its own. It's like a fucking alien, man. The aliens get the credit for this creation.
Okay.
Right. Like.
All right. I mean, fuck yeah. Aliens get it.
Which that whole thing was very off brand. Very like, not like what? Like, I don't know. It was just, we can clearly see something's going on with this man.
It is bizarre to have somebody who is predominantly the forefront of hip-hop and R&B during that particular time. I mean, the late 90s, early 2000s, it started to kind of die off, you know, a little bit, but it was still very prevalent. But for him to go and do something completely 180, just to say that he did, to make something new that people want to gravitate towards, was genius. But his execution was even more brilliant because it drew people in for an extended period of time.
Yeah, exactly. And it's...
But imagine the dude who had to write all this shit. He's like, what in the fuck, man?
Right, because he couldn't read or write, so he's... Oh, I can't. Right. You know, like... Yeah, so we're going to end there, and I'm going to make you guys come back thirsty for more in very, you know, Kel's fashion, I suppose.
Right.
To come back and see what the fuck was going on behind all of this, behind all this public downfall, I think. I mean, cries for help, screams,
I feel that way.
Like, yeah.
I cannot wait. Because I literally know the bare minimum of what happened. And I would really like to... I'm going to look up that in the closet.
Yeah.
Trapped in the closet. Because I need to see at least something. At least one. So I can kind of understand. But I want like a weird one. I don't want one that's like...
They're all weird.
Oh, it's the first one.
Oh, no. That's weird too. They're all fucking weird. I remember like with my brother's ex... I guess, whatever, longtime girlfriend, whatever. One time we were just sitting there and we're like, we were drinking and we were like, let's just watch Trapped in the Closet, man. Let's just watch all of it, like as a whole. Like, you know, like, and we sat there and watched all 33 chapters with the bonus 2 chapters. Oh, and we were like, oh my God, like, this is actually.
What the fuck did I just watch?
Well, we were like, this is actually fucking brilliant. Like, it is.
See?
It's just, it's wild. I invite you guys to go watch it before next week, before we get into everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to at least, I'm going to find some stuff. And just like I said before, I'm going to post a picture of a recorder for those of you who don't know.
Yeah.
And those of you who do know what it is, we have a Facebook page. So it's called Monsters of the Midwest. We're on Facebook. We're on Facebook only. Elder millennials, we couldn't give a goddamn about any of that other shit. Instagram, all that stuff, we're not doing it. So we're on Facebook only. We connected our old group called Tuesday Speakeasy. We connected that to our new Facebook group or our Facebook page. So the people that are still there, cool. If you want to invite more people to join, it's mostly like memes and funny stuff. And I'm sure we could find some stuff about this this guy. Because there's tons of stuff out there, especially memes and all sorts of goofy shit. But that is our primary and only social media. So if you want any announcements, any updates, any sort of stuff that we're going to post as far as pictures and our podcast, our audio for our podcast is going to be on there as well. And it updates just like Apple, just like Google, everything else, it'll be right on there for you to listen to. Always remember the code of the Midwest. Don't talk to strangers. Don't go anywhere alone.
And lock your damn doors. And as always, we'll see you next Tuesday.